Welcome to the Spinfoil Theory Podcast with your host, Taylor B. and The Bagels.
Hello!
Yeah, see, that is exuberance. That's how happy we are to be here with our first repeat guest for welcome you guys to Spinfoil Theory Podcast featuring Wicked Jester Part 2, Spinfoil Boogaloo. That's right. That's right. Serious talk though. If you guys like, because this is gonna come out on Sunday. So real talk. If you guys listening to this could for me if you haven't already. But also, you know what? Do it again if you want to. Like I'm not here to control you. This is your life. Need to bombard this guy on his socials with the well wishes. Yeah. Just. Everywhere he wants to be, I want him to, like, be feeling, like, birthday love. And it's going to be, like, a bittersweet type of love, because he's really going to appreciate the attention, but he's also going to be reminded that he's older.
Yeah, this is true.
I promise for birthday purposes I'll never remind you of that again. But yes.
A reminder that comes in past Sunday, I'm going to be thinking about you.
Oh, man. I hope it's only good things.
Of course.
Yay. But yeah, so personal request to any and everyone listening, and even if, like, let's say it's years from now, fuck it, wish him a happy birthday. Just do it. I think that's like a good inaugural, like, anytime someone listens to this episode, they're just gonna walk away with it. I need to wish that wicked guy's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Randomly, 2042. I'm sitting there on my couch and my computer goes off. I'm like, what in darn over here?
Happy birthday! And what's great about that is you'll probably believe it. What's great about that is you'll be so old that you'll probably believe it. You'll be like, oh, it is my birthday, huh? All right.
I'll be sitting there like, oh, the grandkids finally got a hold of me.
Oh, Billy! But yes.
I knew they didn't forget about me.
That's right. Oh, yeah. No. So, all right. So, clearly, this is a great idea. So, just please continue the joke well into the future if you can. This week, we, actually, first a little housekeeping. Before I get too far in, if you haven't listened to us before, we're an advanced series, sort of session podcast, and it's not that we're, like, the smartest guys on the block or anything like that. It's just that a lot of, the things that we talk about, given our format and, sort of, like, the nature of the show, we don't always go in depth to everything that we mention, and so there's a little bit of, like, expectation that you understand the subject matter, at least, like, to a point. Now, with that out of the way, if you ever wonder about anything or you would like to ask about something, you can feel free to reach out to us. We're happy to either give you direction or just answer you directly ourselves. You can get us on Twitter at SpinfoilTheory. You can email us at SpinfoilTheory@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on Twitter at ThisIsRedLeader, LITRE, all one word. And yeah, if you catch, like, myself on any various Discord, on the Focus Fire chat or something like that, feel free to tag me there. The Bagels is all over LFG. If you have a bagel centric question, he's also got access to the show Twitter now. He hasn't really done anything with it, but, like, he's gonna dip his toe. He's gonna dip his toe in that Twitter water.
Gonna get all up in that Twitter water.
You don't even know.
That's what I'm saying. Well, does he get the Twitter water, or does the Twitter water get the bagels? That's the positivity I'm trying to put out there about this. But yeah, so so if
you're not, you're in for, folks. This is gonna be fun.
Yeah. I'm jazzed for it. It's gonna be a good one. It's been a good week. So yeah, you know, deal with that. But yeah, no. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach us at any of those spots. We'll be happy to try and help you out there. This week's topic is one that's a little near and dear to me. It goes back to the the spinfoil I used to post on the Reddits there. And this one is basically supposing that the Vex, as we encounter them, the models, the chassis, the shapes, and sort of the things that they, some of the things that they do, are actually modeled after the Hive. And so those comparisons sort of start and begin with the lore of how the Vex actually came into this universe. And if you go back to D1, you go back to the whichever Book of Sorrows it was. I know that's the only one we have in full, and I know that there's more than one. But, like, I just can't... It's, like, the only actual book we have. Everything else is just an excerpt. So I'm just, I always struggle with calling them the Books of Sorrows. Also because it's, like, double plural. So it doesn't... just, like, bugs me. It's a personal bugaboo. So...
it's the Hive, so it bugs everyone.
Ooh, yeah. I like how huge they are, and they're the... they're wherever they're from's, like, they clean the chitin. I was like, you know how tiny chitin gets, and you just have this big ass thrall just eating it.
I'm telling you, that goes into my own spin foil. That I can't. No, stick to one spin foil.
All right. Yeah. Augustus, you got to save some for later.
Yeah.
But the crux of it goes back to the Book of Sorrows, where Crota is essentially tricked into tearing open a rift and. An interdimensional rift, and the Vex just start pouring out of it. And the Vex, having never encountered anything like the Hive before, made some great adaptations. And like this battle goes on for, it's like a couple centuries, right? I know it's definitely decades, if I recall correctly.
I think it's at least decades. It's not. I don't think it's centuries, because I think the centuries was reserved for Crota, like going through time. Trying to murder his way back through.
Oh yeah.
I don't think it was quite hundreds of years.
It was a long time. It was a very, very long time.
With the Vex, it could have been like 5 minutes, and they made it seem that way.
Oh god, yeah. If they just time warped everything, so like when. Yeah, we'll get to this. That's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun. I gotta spit this out though. I am all six. I'm all over the place trying to focus on a topic tonight. So, long story short, the Vex developed their first mind specifically for war. Her name is Quaria, and she starts. I gender her, so like sorry. It starts. They start. Mimicking the Hive. They mimic rituals, they start redesigning their chassis, and one thing you might start to notice is, like, goblins kind of match up with Thrall a little bit, in the way that their legs are shaped, different things about them, and then you have hobgoblins paired over to acolytes. Yeah, and some of their movement, the fact that they're most often the ones paired with for the Hive, they get the sniper rifle, and then you have my personal favorite, you have minotaurs and knights. Now I always wonder, because of the whole sword logic thing and the sort of general disdain, do you think maybe that the reason there are boomer Hive knights is because of this encounter with the Vex?
Been in multiple conflicts prior to this that probably would have required long-range weaponry.
Yeah, but I feel like their solution to that is to throw a moon at it. Anyway, so that just to round off that story, that fight ends with Oryx coming back, being real pissed at his kids, and he throws Crota through the closing Vex gate as he seals it, and then Crota has to like fight his way back through time, which is what Wicked was talking about, for like hundreds, for centuries. He's there a while.
By the way,
yeah,
I would highly consider also that the Hive wizards and the Hydras are also fairly similar.
I would.
Because you think about it, the Hydras actually have like those broad shoulders that come up, those wide spanning shoulders, and then their weapons are the long range weapons that just
And they have a shield.
And they have the shield.
Yeah.
Which sometimes the Minotaurs have, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the Knights have, sometimes they don't. That was their, because the Hydras are usually considered to be like the
mines. It's commanders. Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's a every chassis we've seen of a mine has been a Hydra. So far. Oh, yeah. Up until not even Prison of Elders, but the raid right now too, Garden of Sorrows. That's a big.
Wasn't Atheon? Wasn't he considered a Vex mind?
He's not named as one. He's like a Conflux. He's the Conflux of time. Yeah, or he was. Maybe he still is. It's time travel.
Anyway.
But yeah. So I guess up until Garden of Sorrows, where you have a giant harpy, essentially, that you fight for most of it, and then it like morphs into a Minotaur dude. And possibly even before, but like with Atheon, because I think that's a good. He is in charge of that place. But he could be. Anyway. It's they're mostly Hydras, so I think you have a good thought there too. And so the sort of crux of it is that Quaria, even though she gets taken and she doesn't stay with the Vex, is sort of like the founder of the Hezzan collective and corrective, or at least like they form because of what she did, because what Quaria does is they're the first one to. Like mimic the hive in their worship of the darkness, and it actually helps.
The worship of the darkness or worship, period.
I would say, well, because other species the hive may have encountered may have known or like had things that they worshipped, like the fallen or Elixni certainly worshipped the traveler. Mm-hmm. But so I say of the darkness then at that point just because I figure they had to have encountered.
I was thinking, whenever I read that entry, I was thinking more of it was, like, referring to worship directly to Curia.
Mm.
But that's what it was taking as. It wasn't necessarily worship to a higher power, per se, because the Hive weren't giving their... Because the worship itself was, like, a dedication or a tithe to something else. And they were... The reason that they were observed that was because of the tithe that they're... The Hive were giving their upper echelon leaders.
Were worshiping their leadership. I see what you're saying. I would only offer that that in the Vex's case, just because we find the Vex doing things with the absence of Quaria. So if they don't learn about the darkness to worship it, then like the Hezzan collective and corrective like has to have a moment where they discover the darkness in there.
Well, and I think so. With that portion of it, the Vex would have known about the darkness and the light if their origins from the Windworth book. If the origins that it talks about as far as you know, the potentially what was linked to, or I guess hinted at as being the Vex, are true, then the Vex knew about the darkness way before they ever encountered the Hive.
I always wonder about that because that would make sense, or at least they would be aware of the darkness, but without worshiping it by way of the sword logic. Because I think that's the other thing that they sort of, like, it's...
Yeah,
worship of the darkness by way of the sword logic. Yeah. I would only offer that there is a passage in that same book where the person narrating basically says like these are all parallels so that you can understand it.
Correct. Yeah.
So the idea that it describes something like the Vex to me with that other passage there also kind of leaves it at a place where like, yeah, but it might just be describing something like the Vex because we understand what we understand that much about them.
Correct. By the way, there is no darkness, I am solitude.
Yeah, Balin should be taken with a big grain of salt. It's useful as a tool to examine the big picture, but we shouldn't be using it to draw specific conclusions about any specific events. So.
I do like how it says the idea of describing time as a river is the narrator's like favorite one. Like, that's the most clever one, but you're still wrong. Like, oh shit. Like, okay.
I did find the line about the worship in the Book of Sorrows, and it's Coria captured some worm larvae and began experimenting with them. Soon, Coria Blade Transform manifested religious tactics. By directing worm worship at the worms, Coria learned it could alter reality with mild ontopathogenic effects.
Gotcha.
Being an efficient machine, Coria manufactured a priesthood and ordered all its sub-minds to believe in worship. So that's basically what it has to say. So it's saying that it's directing its subordinates to worship in order to gain the
favor of the worms.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Without ingesting them. Smart.
Because it put it inside of the smaller Vex, correct? But never put it inside of itself? Or did none of the Vex take the worms?
They've never taken them. And not all of the Vex worship the darkness, also. Yeah. Good to note.
Yeah, for some Vex reason, Coria never attempted to introduce worm larvae into its mind fluid, is what it said on that.
Into its mind fluid.
So it doesn't specifically say about any sub Vex units.
How does that suck?
Right?
Yeah.
Alright, I need a volunteer.
Well, I always wonder if it's one of those things like in I don't know if anyone's a fan of Westworld. But basically in Westworld there are these moments where like someone is interacting with one of the sort of like robot automatons they have called hosts, and it'll just like turn it off real quick. And you're like, and shut down. And like, oh. And I always wonder if maybe that's kind of how it goes in the Vex when a mind wants to experiment on something. Like, we need a volunteer. No, like, all right, you. And you're turned off. I'm like, oh. All right. Let's make this work.
The one lowest ranking goblin is just sitting there shrinking down in the corner. Like, don't pick me.
They go into that little, when they're all like, in the almost fetal position.
Stasis.
Like, yeah, they just go all the way down to that. Like, just like... and it's really interesting, too, because the Hezen, Collective and Corrective, outside of sort of like the Precursors and Descendants type thing, are... If they were developed in those first moments where the Vex were let into our universe and encounter the Hive for the first time, it makes sense that they all look like old as fuck and have like overgrowth and shit on them.
This is true.
Which, I mean, I think is like a nice little detail, especially considering the whole timey-wiminess of it with the Precursors looking old and the Descendants looking new. Or no, other way around. Descendants look old, Precursors look new. Yeah.
No, wait, no.
Yeah, because the Precursors...
The Precursors... Yeah, did you say the Descendants look old and the Precursors look new? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Or, let me see.
The ones that are supposed to be the youngest look the oldest.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Yeah. There was actually one thing in D1...
Yeah, so the precursors are the ones who look all like fresh and shiny out of like space materials.
Yeah.
Super space. I'm sorry, you were saying?
I'm trying to find the name of the Vex. The large Minotaurs at the end of the D1 campaign, the very first D1 campaign that we went up against.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Gatekeeper?
Not the Minotaur Gatekeeper, the three Minotaurs that you face after that.
Oh,
There's three Minotaurs that you fight.
Yeah.
And the last one has a very, very interesting name, and I'm blanking on it right now.
Is it like...
Back on it from current time, it's one of those where you're just like, oh, crap. I'm trying to locate it inside my files right now.
I really hope it's something like really similar, but kind of like a spoonerism, like Jaytheon.
No, not exactly.
It's Jaytheon, Raytheon.
funny note, though, as far as that whole part where the Vex invade Crota's throne world, does anybody else picture Sabathun and her little thrall minion buddy that she keeps around just sitting off to the side and being like, got him?
I'm imagining her and his sisters having, because, you know, we never learn what happened to their mom. And I imagine them having this, like, sort of like a, like a maternal, like, you know, older, younger, like, moment. They're just, like, sitting back eating some popcorn, and she's just like, see, that's how you do it. You didn't really have to do anything, and look where we're at. This is amazing. And they're, like, eating popcorn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The three Minotaurs at the end are the Eschaton Mind, the Primeval Mind, and the Immanence Mind. Yep.
The Primeval Mind was the one I was looking at.
I guess you were right about their chassis too. In retrospect, yeah, 100% right. They are not all hydras.
So, in the Primeval Mind, the reason why that stuck out to me is obviously with everything going on with Gambit right now. Primevals were talked about as being the oldest of the evils that they could find on the other side. In the Taken realm.
Mm-hmm. This is why they're so big.
Mm-hmm. This, it kind of stuck out to me. It's like, oh, Primeval, huh?
Right? And that, I think that just, that's really cool. I hope we get more on that later. And I think that'll come with really learning more about the Vex, probably. I hope it's not one of those things we only learn really about the Vex by way of, like, other races. Like, we learn about them from, like, because the most we really know about them is from the Hive. And, like, collecting their lore. So, like, it's kind of, I hope we get more direct lore. Like, I think they've had a fair shot for, like, content. I think there's a lot of, like, game and exposure we get to them. But, like, even with all that, like, what do you really know? Like, oh, it's, you know, we killed these other guys and they told us. Like, oh, okay.
Have nothing comparable to like a Books of Sorrow type lore collection for the best.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
My question is, do they have something similar to, like, the World's Grave for the Vex?
That would be cool.
That would be an amazing, like, can you imagine how much the Warlocks would freak out if they found that?
They find it.
The history of the universe.
Part one. I would really enjoy that. I would also really laugh if, like, the first entry is just, like, a bunch of ones and zeros. I'm like, wait, what the fuck?
One of the things that I thought about as far as Crota cutting into the Vex realm like that, like, remember how they talked about the Vex were themselves, like, this, they were the patterns within reality, that within the flower game that molded and constantly won? This, the idea of cutting into the Vex realm itself, and this kind of ties into your spinful theory a little bit. The Vex may not have existed as physical beings in the realm that they existed in. So if you think about them as like abstract concepts that live in a dimension that abides by different laws of physics and rules, and it's basically a dimension of I guess realized physics. So it's a dimension that it lives within the rules of physics that govern our reality. And that by Crota tearing a hole in it and then being able to come into our portion of that dimension, they had to take on a physical form, and this is how they manifested themselves. They chose the bodies they did because it resembled the life forms they first encountered.
I can dig that. I always go back to and this might be to your point. For me, when I think of what they were, what first spilled out of that tear Crota made, is my mind goes back to construction bots. And I personally I think about, like, what's efficient, what makes a good, because the Vex are efficient. Like, they're not, but, like, you know what isn't efficient? Legs.
Legs.
Not when you can fly. So I always imagine maybe like, maybe not just harpies, but I always imagine something like that. Something that's not really bound by traction. Yeah, and harpies and hydras are kind of what my mind goes to, sort of initially, because that just makes the most sense for being great at construction. Unless you're, like, building everything at, like, a nano level, but if those guys are, like, physically doing construction on it, like, that would be 100% the body I would design for them.
Yeah.
You have a tool, built in?
The
yeah.
The part of that goes into the whole thing about the Vex mind fluid having been basically the liquefied remains of an alien race that, like, there's that whole theory that they were, even though it says this is what they are, they were the unbound rules that won the flower game. Like, there's still that whole idea of, you know, the radiolaria essentially being, like, you could basically break it down into a similar liquefied data in bodies.
Well, I always wonder if the radiolaria are, because obviously they have firmware, right? Like they we've seen one get turned on before, and, like, it's
yeah,
just injected.
Mechanics.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always wonder if maybe, like, the radiolaria are... Not in the sense that the Vex are the radial area, because if they were the radial area, I don't think they'd be making waterfalls of themselves everywhere.
No.
Just doing whatever. Like, that's just me. That's just me. I feel like, because I feel like that would be...
Maybe those are like the nudists of the of the Vex race. They could be like the free love Vex.
It just...
Let's just mingle. We don't need bodies. Let's just become one.
I feel like there's a reason Ikora says they are not the radial area. Like, I'm guessing they, someone's, if, I, like, that can't be, like, an idea that only we out of game have thought of. Like, oh, what if they are that stuff? Like, I bet there's a guardian who's like, you know what, I'm gonna shoot all the stuff. And I'm gonna see if that makes a difference. Like,
I think they said in Focus Fire, like, don't pee in radial area.
Oh, because it'll run up like this, like a urban legend fish. Like, oh god,
yeah.
It'll swim up. Oh no. I read a good thing about why that's an urban legend, and while it can swim up like an actual stream because of how peeing actually works for a man, it's like it would have to, like, they wouldn't be able to because it's not a continuous thing. But yeah,
always.
Always, that's, like, one of my worst, like, when you first learn about that in, like, 5th or 6th grade, you're like, oh, God.
Nah, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah, here on the shoreline.
Yeah.
That's, like, the number one way to convince any guy not to do something is be like, oh, yeah, there's something that can, you know, harm your penis in there.
Like, will a cup help? No.
Yeah.
Go right through it.
In there, it's getting in. Yeah, I'm gonna pass.
Yeah, I'm going to decline. I'm just gonna just check no on that one. And that's as far as I'm willing to go. Oh. But yeah, I don't think they are the radial area, but I've sort of postulated that they could be like a processor or like a CPU, like a central sort of chip, just because of the nature of radial area. Yeah.
What do you think? So, do you think the Vex have enslaved the radial area as a resource, essentially?
I don't know that the radial area have personhood. They're like single-celled organisms.
That's kind of how I lean as well. It's a part of their body.
Yeah.
Necessity, more so than their.
So kind of like the human body being 80% or 90% water.
Well, I think of it more as like a reverse cyborg. Like, the Vex started out as robots, and now they've introduced this organic part.
Okay.
That's reasonable to me. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. That's sort of where I'm going. That's sort of where I lean with it, and I like the idea of like a reverse cyborg.
Just,
right. Yeah. Not like robot with, like, I don't know, skin on it or something weird like that, guys, if I gave you, like, a horrible mental image.
It puts the skin on its lip.
Yeah, like that. That seems weird. I guess I'm thinking like in this case, it's just like, what if something in nature can do something better than you can create synthetically? And you just like add it for that purpose. So I guess like, yeah, like that's where my mind's coming from. But yeah, so that's sort of the legs of the theory. It's that they encountered this thing. There are clearly Vex that still worship the darkness, possibly from, you know, that began in that event. And that the things that they do, like what I was talking about, with legs, there, well, you know, I think they have those not only because they're mimicking the hive, but because, you know, kneeling is, I would argue a more effective form of worship. Or at least yeah, to like, for their purposes in mimicking the worship of the worms and therefore the darkness. Serious. Yeah, it's I think there's a lot of that going on into how we see the Vex that we currently see. In you know, D1 and D2, and so those are sort of the legs. It's because that's who they first met, because that's how they became strong. Or stronger, to where they can stand up to paracausal beings. Mm-hmm. Then I wholeheartedly believe, especially since like they're still around those guys. They're still around those and other factions of these like paracausal guys. So like, there's no way I think they're giving that up. Maybe like some other Vex who don't need it like look different. So that's the crux of it. Those are the legs of the. Of the thing there. What do you guys think? What do you think, Mr. Wicked?
I definitely think this is a good theory, a very good plausible theory. The idea that the Vex would mimic life forms in this gap or in this reality or universe
dimension,
what it may be,
yeah.
That they would mimic the successful organisms here, whenever they move into our reality, that it makes sense to me. Evolution-wise, which is the majority of what, you know, the darkness side of this whole game is, the evolutionary aspect of it definitely leans to that, and supports that argument that, you know, the most successful organisms develop with very similar characteristics. So. It could be that, like, the Ahamkar and the worms, they had, like, a similar kind of progenitor that came before them that kind of gave that definition to it, as far as
I always wonder. Defines
a physical body. But I think it's...
Excuse me, guys, sorry.
I think it's completely plausible that the Vex modeled themselves after the Hive.
I'm picking up what you're putting down there. I really like the, I've always liked the comparisons between the Ahamkara and the worms. Mm-hmm. And for a time there, even the Leviathan, that Oryx meets in the center of Fundament.
And you ever find it interesting that the Leviathan speaks in the same kind of computer, like the same kind of font and setup that Rasputin does in the lore entries?
I mean, if that's what it evolves into, I think that makes sense too, because like it's protecting something, like it's guarding something.
The Leviathan that was in Fundament, as it's an AI. It was a massive machine that was put there.
I mean, that's what the Leviathan we encounter in game is.
I don't necessarily think it was the same thing. But in all reality, like, I would compare the Leviathan that was in the deep to rescue.
Interesting. We might have to add that one to the list.
That's an interesting thought process. I've never really considered that, but it makes sense.
Especially when you think about this, the whole thing about Dark Mirror,
and how
Rasputin is trying to protect the Krill and say, no, don't go to this power. I'm trying to protect you from it. And then the Krill go to the darkness, and Rasputin was like, no, don't go to the light.
Yeah, no, we'll revisit this. Please, please scribe that.
It's already scribed.
Scribe!
Mom's out, but
yeah.
The pen.
Yeah, I think that definitely will be interesting to talk about again.
Yeah, I like your comparison with the two of them because, like I said, it ties back into the mirror aspect of the Hive and the reflections that we see throughout Destiny in general.
Yeah, because as far as we know, they've been operating. I mean, unless you got like the Vex just being just about everywhere once they get there. They're the longest operating faction that we know of. I mean, I mean, we'll see about the Dorito ships when they get here, but yeah.
So I wonder if you could also draw a parallel between, because like you said, it's a cyborg or a machine that added in organic compounds to it.
Yeah.
Just like the Vex, the Hive had to add in an extra thing to it. Everything about this game is about, we were this, and then we brought this additional thing into our system, and it made us something greater and more. So like the Vex, it would be the introduction of the Radiolaria. For the Hive, it was the introduction of the worms. For humanity, it was the introduction of light.
Or the Traveler, and it's really interesting. I was going to say the same thing about the Fallen. For the Elixni, it's the introduction of the Traveler that causes them to ultimately be where they're at.
No, it's not. That causes them ultimately to be where they're at, but that's not their current one. Their current one is the Aether. The Demiurge.
Well, don't they always have the Aether? Like,
they were always
on Aether. It's just their planet, like, had it.
Yeah, naturally. No, like, it was described as, like, streams of the stuff.
Yeah, it was just, like, everywhere.
Apparently, the Travelers would set up the freaking hierarchy of power, apparently. Or was responsible for setting up the hierarchy of power.
Oh, the,
with the Archons
and all that. Because so far the Traveler itself has not been shady. It's just been dead most of the time.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes now that it's awake. But I always kind of took it like, that's the structure that the Traveler probably set up was not so restrictive and oppressive. It's just this is what that evolved into once you added severe struggle. Just a daily life. Yeah.
This actually goes back to the Leviathan, the one that was on Fundament. The Leviathan straight up, one of the things it said was, the way of the sky is difficult and harsh, but it is fair. It talks about how rough the life how rough life is beneath it, and it actually supports the idea of the krill being down in this gas giant, and the aliens above them in the outer rim planets around Fundament, or the moons around Fundament, being successful in having all these powers. The Traveler saw that as a balance, as a necessary balance. That had to be maintained, even though it meant that the krill were living short, miserable lives. It was okay because everybody was allowed to live.
And I think the Traveler choosing to try and take out the worm gods is also like a reasonable thing. Like, well, I'm going to save this many lives if I. I think there's a way it could definitely like work out that logic. And I always imagine. Huh?
You think it was trying to kill him?
Yeah, that's why it rebelled in the first place. That's why they rebelled in the first place.
They rebelled because they were caged.
Well, they rebelled because they were caged, but then they also found out that the Zizigi was going to happen once the planets aligned.
That wouldn't have affected the worm gods. That only affected the antler, the creatures on the surface.
No, it would have destroyed everything. Yeah, I always interpreted that as like it was a kill stroke.
Okay, so how about this? Like, this is the way I see that. Take a molecule, or take a glass of water, and toss it out of the glass into space. What kind of image do you get?
Round.
It's round.
Sphere.
That's what a gas giant is. It's round.
Yeah.
It's a malleable, now the Zizgy, all the Zizgy was taking gravity points on both sides. Now, if you put something inside this glob of water, and it stays in the center of the glob of water, and you stretch the sides with gravity, and then let go, what happens to the thing on the inside?
So you're saying, right? Yeah.
The inside doesn't change. There's nothing really about the inside. It might shift around and do things, but nothing is compressed on the inside, nothing or smashed necessarily. It's the things on the surface that you find most havoc and friction.
But we don't. Okay, but we don't know. We don't really know what the ZZG, like how it was going to work. We just know that it was waiting for the planets to be in alignment.
Well, the whole point of that was that the planets being in alignment created a gravity swell.
Yeah, look. Imagine the gravity pulling on the fundament sea, lifting it into a swollen bulge. And then as the Syzygy passed, that wave would collapse down and kill all the inhabitants of the planet that were on the surface. Because water's an incompressible fluid, so essentially anything underwater would be mostly unaffected, especially something as strong as the worm gods.
Well then, all right. If not to destroy them by way of that action, then the results of that action the goal could be to starve them. But I still felt like what it was doing was killing the worms.
Sure.
The hive had a dead larva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like one got out or one wasn't sealed away or something.
Traveler knew that the Krill would be the only ones that were close enough to be drawn in, but apparently the whole reason why all the species of the Fundament were there in the first place is
crash
because
ship.
The worm gods were drawing them to them.
passerbys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's like moths to a zapper. What is that? Yeah. Oh god. Alright, let's lose all of our history. And devolve into sort of like a kingdom thing.
planets that had been blown apart were what ended up getting formed into what was the crust of the Fundament. It was basically the fragments of, like, because I think one of the hives said that we floated here on fragments, or we came here on fragments of destroyed planets.
Became
like the different layers of the Syzygy, or of the Fundament.
I thought
nobody was actually.
Yeah, like I knew that. I figured the way they describe some of those plates.
But like I said, it really, really makes me like the comparison between Titan and what happened to Titan with the gravity swell and what happened with the waves and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then
very
what
similar.
Happened to Fundament. Yeah, it's very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a mention of a. There's even a mention of a species in the Titan books that they say has a hive mentality, where these creatures swarm together.
Yeah.
And they're like little small krill organisms. And they just
that would be funny.
Like
throwback.
Yeah, the whole idea of them starting off so small, and you talking about they're eating the algae, and it's like. This makes a lot more sense when you start thinking about, what if the hive, like the Fallen, whenever they eat ether, whenever these hives start killing things and gaining power within the sword logic, they also become much larger.
Mm-hmm. That would be interesting to think that they were just tiny little scrimps.
Yep.
Just some tiny little guys.
The worms themselves that you see crawling around on the Leviathan, those are considered hive larvae.
Those are hive larvae? Those aren't worms?
Well, they are worms. And the part that really starts messing with you is like, okay, these worms that are lying here on the ground and wriggling around, if you look at them, look at their faces, look at the faces of the worms that you see wriggling around, the faces of the worms are the same thing that you see sitting in the faces of the hive themselves. The worm itself resides in the head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, so, because you shoot it and it like pops out, and then you can shoot that too, or like stamp it.
So the real question is that the worm god, or is that the worm larva that you get that they got from the worm gods, or is that the hive itself? Is that the actual organism that is the hive?
Oh, I think that's the worm. Well, I think once it's in there, like,
is there really anything of the hive left?
Oh, is it like piloting the hive?
Yeah. That's one of the things that I was thinking about was that I don't think there's enough really of the hive left that the worm has essentially assumed the identity of the
enemy. Isn't that like a Doctor Who enemy?
I think I know what you're talking about.
I don't know who fans. Please let me know. I'm not the. I've seen a bunch, especially back when it was on PBS. But yeah. Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. We're not here for Doctor Who, this time.
Unless Doctor Who is the reason why the Vex chose to augment themselves to look like the Hive. If that is the answer.
Oh, if the Rift was really the TARDIS.
Yeah,
that's how all those Vex could come spilling out because it was bigger on the inside. Oh man, that would be scary because that means that doctor ended it with a very cruel fate. Just got.
Vex are originally Daleks.
Yeah.
So I got a question. With you.
Exterminate.
And this one has to do with the whole thing of the Vex and the Hive. But...
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, before we get on with that, why don't we talk to Bagels about his opinion of the theory? Because this is going to take us down a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah, the Bagels, you're on this show too. How you doing, buddy?
I do have a few counterpoints, and basically it boils down to a lot of the lore points towards the Vex still being primarily construction bots. And so, like, we've got Goblin card. Where it's, you are a goblin, a multifunctional armature. Your first purpose is to build, to alter the material world so it can think. Your second purpose is to eliminate threats to building. So, to me, that says that goblins, at the very least, are still primarily construction units. And that extends to the other units. Similarly, we've got Cyclops being... proposed as sensors or beacons in the lore. And it's stuff like that where their weapons are primarily used for construction purposes, either to signal or basically as demolition charges in order to excavate ground that would be difficult otherwise for their automated processes.
Mm-hmm.
So this begs the question of whether or not they altered their forms in order to become combat units when they fought the Hive, or if they were already those forms and those forms were efficient enough and they altered their logic in order to more efficiently fight the Hive. Because the Books of Sorrow don't actually speak to them changing forms in any format. It just says... at first, the Vex clattered around constructing large problems. At first, their constructions were deranged because they didn't understand the sword logic, which defined all rules in Oryx's throne room. Their geometry perplexed them. And so it makes it sound from there that they learned how to more effectively combat the Hive. Obviously by learning about the sword logic. That was at least step one for Coria. And then what happened from there is left a little bit vague. Whether or not they altered their forms is not spoken to precisely, but the forms that they have now do conveniently match up with the forms of the Hive. And whether or not that's just a convenient factor for the Destiny the game universe, as in we're fighting units that are of similar structure because... let's make red bars this format, let's make yellow bars this format, that sort of thought process where you've got smaller enemies, bigger enemies, bigger enemies, and so on. Just as a convenience factor for game design.
Okay. I can't argue with any logic that might come from an out-of-game perspective, because I mean you're basically right. You could draw parallels based on height from any of the races. So I mean there is that, but unlike them, there are no lore-based reasons for this. I would also offer that your example of the hobgoblin is, I mean, yeah, it's still probably primarily construction. Like, as far as I understand, that's their like prime objective is to build and like build on top of and convert. So to me, that makes sense that anything we would encounter would still have that as its primary function. But what I'm saying is it's like form with function. Like, I mean, you're not an efficient construction worker if you have legs when you don't have to have legs. Like it's like they can make shit float. Like there's no reason that they waste time building any of that stuff if it doesn't have a purpose. And so I can't, I have a hard time separating their design from what they're capable of, in sort of like maybe suggesting that they were always like that.
To offer a small counterpoint to that, I think of Minotaurs, because you've got Minotaurs, which are essentially the heavies. They can be used to they use their torch hammers in order to break out large chunks of rock or whatever material they're dealing with. And in doing so, imagine if they didn't have legs and they used those torch hammers, what would happen? They'd go flying backward. Those legs in that instance are useful.
Because a Hydra suit shoots about an equally powerful weapon, if not more powerful, and it doesn't get pushed back.
But they have to use propulsion to keep themselves forward. If they had legs, they would have friction to rely on in order to keep themselves steady, essentially.
But like, why would
He
that
does
be
make a
better?
point there. So he does make a point there because with light, there is no actual force generated behind you're not damaging via an actual impact. You're damaging via heat, an increase of your molecular speed. So there's no actual force being generated against the object that's firing the weapon, whereas with something that's a projectile, think about like in space. Whenever you're in, if you have a free floating body and you're in space and you throw a can, you and the can are both going to move away from each other because there's nothing to stop you from moving, from you both moving, and there's an equal amount of force that has to be distributed between the two of you. Same thing goes for a Hydra. If it's floating in the air and there's no resistance that's actually keeping it pushed forward. If it throws a projectile weapon, then the Hydra would be or the yeah the Hydra would be pushed back
I mean,
because it doesn't.
I think it has to be a form of propulsion, though, like that has like varying degrees. Like I don't think they're like negating gravity. Like you can push them off of things.
I don't think there is either, but I don't necessarily from the looks of the way it operates, it doesn't necessarily look like it's something that's meant to take sudden impact either. Like if it were to use a projectile weapon, I could see the Hydra being pushed back a little bit, or the Harpy,
I
excuse me.
would.
I could see a Harpy being
I
pushed
would
back.
I would I would only like just say like it and granted this might just be game mechanics, but like we hit it with stuff that would do that.
And so when that happens, they have to use propulsion to keep steady. There's no question about that. I do want to state that the torch hammer lore card, it does say that it's firing projectiles of strange matter. So it is actually firing matter, not just light or heat in that sense, instance. So that's my thought process there. I'm not saying that it still couldn't be more efficient to float if it's for pure construction purposes. I'm just offering a counterpoint on possibly why they could have legs as a construction unit.
I mean, I hear you. I guess at that point, I would argue for tread, or literally like anything with more surface area.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, friction it is a form of it's efficient in order to. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but like legs not legs specifically.
We'll see, but here's the interesting part about legs. Legs are actually an extremely efficient version of a brace. They're actually a very, very naturally, and this is why you see so many animals that are alive that have legs themselves, and there's not more things like snakes running around, or,
I should.
whenever you're dealing with gravity, and you're dealing with force applied against the leg, and the muscle structure behind it, or for in the Vex case, the pistons, is actually an extremely efficient process, or an extremely efficient mechanism for handling weight and applying pressure back. Vice, say, if you're just trying to stick out legs on a camera's tripod and just stick things out and have that be a brace, the legs are much more easily manipulated to actually be able to adjust and move as needed according to the environment that you need to utilize it in.
Precisely.
I do want to clarify. I mean, like, bipedal. Like, just the two. Like, four legs? Four legs is great. Four legs I could see them having on their own. But it's just, like, bipedal movement is, like, the least best way to walk.
Well, if the least best way to walk, or the least,
like,
fastest way to travel?
No, it's like, because you're not actually, like, you're not really, like, walking like other animals do. Like, you're controlling a fall.
Yeah, okay, I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, it's great that we figured out how to do that, don't get me wrong, but it's not really the same thing as what, like, a four-legged animal does.
Three legs more.
I am the beast with 10 million legs. The vextipedes?
I want to see a vex centipede now.
That Dude, like, that would make sense. Because, like, everything that it did, I'd be like, yeah, that's efficient as fuck.
Actually, I could absolutely see a vex centipede. That makes a lot of sense from a constructive perspective.
Yeah, it's like getting all over at it, adding finishing touches, doing more complex work. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely...
I don't want to see it, but it would make sense.
Yeah.
It just starts phasing in and out of reality. Zip, zip, zip. You have to figure out the pattern of where it's going to wall. Otherwise, it's going to wipe your entire team.
Otherwise, its destination will be your chest. And just like, oh god. Just like murders you that way, and it already has your ghost. It started in your backpack. Oh, that would be scary. That would be scary. All right, I hope they make that. So with that, Bagel's final score.
I still think it's plausible that the Vex modeled their units after the Hive.
Mm-hmm.
My only caveat to that is it seems more like a logic issue that they had to twist in order to effectively combat the Hive, learn the sword logic, and put Corey on the task of basically teaching all the sub minds how to handle the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought process is that, there's potential there that they could have altered their units, how they built them in order to combat the Hive more effectively, but I think it was more so from a logic perspective. So I'm gonna give this a final score of
10 plausible. Wicked. What's your final score there? What do you got?
I'm going to give it a 35 plausible.
Nice.
Because that's how old I am today, and I very much like
this. Happy birthday! If you guys have been listening to our rambling and forgot, please, whenever you hear this, or even just randomly, hit him up on all his socials and wish him a happy birthday. You can put a little, like, from Spinfoil Theory on the end of it, so he specifically knows how long this joke will run.
I will be keeping tally.
Excellent. I guess that leaves me. Final score. I'm gonna give it a 44 caliber plausibility. That's what I'm going to give it. I think there's a lot of legs to it. I think the idea that that initial interaction really sort of shaped how they do things in this universe. But honestly, like, they could have just, like, they might not write it that way at all. So I won't go too high too high with it. There's still room that it could just be, you know, coincidence. Or maybe they looked that way first.
Yeah, I think
if the Winterware stuff, yeah.
Enough flexibility that they could take it whatever the direction they want to yet.
Yeah,
there's definitely merit to the theory, for sure.
What if the Hive modeled their skeletal structures after the Vent?
Yo. I think those files are inside the computer. That's why. Yeah, like it could be the other way. It could be they're like the Simpsons. They did it first. I leave it open to go either way. Wicked, happy birthday and thank you again. Where can any new fans you've made on this recording find you?
Any new fans can find me on PlayStation, Xbox, PC as Wicked Jester, mostly on Destiny. I've been known to occasionally play Overwatch. On Twitter, you can find me at Wicked Jester, WYKIDJESTR, and on Twitch and Reddit.
Nice. And I can confirm I've seen him on all of those platforms except the Xbox.
Been on Xbox, alright? I played against Men in Arms, I promise.
Yeah, I just don't even have an Xbox. Yeah, I don't have one, so, like, I can't...
Can't comment on it.
Yeah, like, you could be on it right now. I don't know. I can't say what it is. The PlayStation beep. Yeah. Definitely.
By the way, I'm going to get a calendar and put it up here, just like they got in the Tower Hangar, where it's 0 days until last incident. It's going to be 0 days until last happy birthday.
Oh, I love it.
From the Flow podcast.
I really.
You Norse for New Year pretty quickly here.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm really hoping, because know what you can do though. You should use it, because every time you get it, just use that to get free dessert somewhere.
Yeah, there we go.
Just be like, look, man, my friend just messaged me because it's my birthday.
That works.
And I gotta say, like, I've never been at a place that asked for ID. I'm gonna need to see it that it's your birthday, sir.
Just follow me on Twitter, man.
Happy birthday from the Swift Father podcast. See?
Funny thing is, like, half the people that are on Twitter in general, I don't think really look at it. Or think about it, because I know they've had those horny on main days,
mm-hmm.
and nobody like really like looks into it and says, okay, well, let's see just how legitimate this thing is. And they got one person on there that's just like, happy horny on main day. They're like, yeah, do it. And so you start saying happy birthday to somebody, it catches on like wildfire. It's like, my birthday was like 6 months ago.
I love it. I really want that to happen for you. You just have multiple threads. And like, if you see someone else do it, and guys, if you see someone else do it, like, you didn't miss your chance. Comment on that comment with the same comment. Just keep that tree going. Yeah, that's don't be discouraged. Like, your strength is in your numbers. With that, I'm gonna love it. I really hope it takes off. And like, even if this show like burns to the ground, I want like years later, like, happy birthday from the Spin for the Harry podcast. Just like starts a thing. That would make me happy. Shouting out this week to everyone staying safe out there. Everyone. Expressing themselves here in the U.S., here in D.C., using their First Amendment rights, and sticking it out. Definitely here with you. Bagels, you got any shout-outs?
Well, I just want to shout out to Wicked, because he's been a champ, sticking with us through our adventures in podcasting this week.
Yeah.
I love being on here with you guys. It's great.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
It's been a blast with you, man. We greatly appreciate it. So.
We've been keeping Raz entertained, too. She's
I love it. I love it. I love it. That's what's gonna make. Then really, we've already won. So it's.
Yeah, right?
That's right. So you got any shout outs?
Just a big shout out again, like you say, Taylor, to everybody right now supporting their rights and their freedoms. Just make sure you're out there staying safe. Make sure you're focusing on delivering the message.
And yeah.
Be kind to each other. Treat each other with humanity and decency.
And I know I'm using a little bit broader language just in case you're wondering. Black Lives Matter, like that's I can say that very easily. I'm not trying to avoid saying it, so yeah.
For those of you who don't understand why the All Lives Matter thing might be a bit offensive, ask them to explain it to you. Alright, it's worth your time to pay attention.
Yeah, no, there's an implicit two in that sentence that you're missing. I guess with that, guys, this has been a great episode. Thank you for coming on it again. Really, really appreciate your flexibility, and happy fucking birthday from the Spin Foil Theory podcast. With that, you guys, everyone stay safe, and we'll see you next time. Bye.